Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 278. I want to thank you guys for listening each and every week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Woodway, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the product and the people. And Woodway, I've had in every weight room I've ever done. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, please let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, joined by a good buddy of mine, Noel Durfee. He's the head strength coach at Duke. I mean, he's a guy that I've looked up to for a lot of years, and not too much ahead of me in terms of the age in the profession, but a guy that's done it at a high level since the beginning, and I just respect tremendously. So appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Ron, thank you. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
No, you know, you've been, you're a former Vol as well. Mississippi, BYU, you've been at Duke for quite some time now. You know, which place best defines you? Like, where do you feel like you kind of grew into you, the person that you are today?
Yeah, no, great question. Man, you know what, Ron, I would say a little bit everywhere. You know, obviously at Tennessee, holy cow, how fortunate. I came up with Coach Stuckey. You know, I got there, I started volunteering in 96, and actually – Coach Moffitt gave me the opportunity to come in and volunteer. So I was there, again, almost 3 years. So I was there with Coach Stuckey, of course, Tommy for the first couple of years, and Chris Carlisle. Tony Allison was there as well, you know. So I was very fortunate to kind of come up and cut the teeth, or however you want to term it, under that crew, you know. And then that was Eric Ciano, Double A, you know, Johnny Long. What a crew. You know, so Coach Stuckey, I learned, man, what I always admired about Coach Stuckey was his relationship with the players.
Yeah.
You know, the kids loved him, absolutely loved him. You know, Tommy taught us so much about just coaching, you know, movements, and just top to bottom, you know. Then from there, I went to BYU. So with Chuck, you know, with Coach Diggins, man, I learned organization. I don't know if I've ever met anybody more organized in my life. You know, he did not miss a beat. You know, his equipment at that point, now this is 1998. So his stuff, I don't know how many years old it was at that point, but looked like it's still showroom new.
Right.
You know? So, and then with Greg Warner, I learned so much about, again, just his passion for the profession, you know, which is unparalleled. You know, he loves this profession. You know, and then Coach Mendoza at Ole Miss, again, just didn't miss anything. You know, Ruben was, again, a great man to work for, you know, taught me about handling a staff.
Yeah.
You know, again, was very compassionate, you know, towards staff members, you know, families, you know, and that's something, again, I've tried to take along, you know. So a little bit of everything from everybody, you know, praise God. You know, I've been fortunate who I came up through and who I came up under. And, you know, man, I've loved every second of who I've worked with.
Well, I think we're all products of our experiences. But I think that you said in there that I don't want people to miss is that it wasn't just the X's and O's, the strength and conditioning that you were learning. You were learning how to work with people, work with staffs, learn how to lead staffs, you know, and you're taking notice of that in those moments, and you know, knowing that you know, you're going to be a head strength coach and you're going to lead a department and lead a team and all those types of things. And I mean, that stuff starts early. You don't become a head strength coach, you know, all of a sudden because you get an opportunity, you get to be a head strength coach because you prepared yourself to be a head strength coach.
Right. The X's and O's are easy.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. You know, handling people's the tough part, you know, player wise, coach wise, staff wise. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you don't have as long a career in this profession without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learn from it?
Man, make mistakes every day. So it's hard to narrow it down to just one big one. But one would be, again, just, man, I love what I do. You know, I love what I do for a living. Call it what you want, you know, a hobby you're fortunate enough to get paid to do. Not everybody is as passionate about doing it, you know, from a player standpoint, from a coach standpoint, man, I love it. Love the grind, you know, and it's hard sometimes to realize not everybody loves it as much as you do.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, you know, that's one big mistake I've learned. Another mistake is it's fun to go back and look at old programs you did.
Yeah.
You know, the original programs you made, you know, like from here, you go back 10 years and look back at some things. What the hell was I thinking?
Right.
Those type of things. And that just kind of how things evolve, you know, over the time, you know? So, you know, to say one big mistake, man, one of it, again, would just be, you know, not everybody loves as much as you love it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's so true. And that's oftentimes what's got me in trouble is confusion, that passion. Mm-hmm. And having an emotional response, you know, and
yeah, no doubt,
players or coaches or staff members or whatever. But you got to treat them as if you want, you know, as if they want to be what they want to be treated like, not like necessarily how you want to be treated.
Amen. That is something you learn again with experience. You know, it's funny, and that, yeah, I'm sure you say the same thing. You know, what you've realized is the older you get, the more you realize, the less you know.
It's absolutely, you know? Right.
And that's again just something you learn more and more along the way. You know, it's great to have young coaches. You know, we hired Drew McDuffie not long ago. Was a GA at Clemson, you know. And this guy is great with shoulders. You know, so he kind of does stuff with the quarterbacks, you know. And again, just a really talented, smart guy, yeah. You know. So you try to learn more and more from that type, you know, in your staff, you know. And another thing is, from my standpoint, you know, what I try to tell these guys is, coach the way you're wired to coach, you know, don't try to be something you're not, you know? So again, from my standpoint, you try not to make people something they're not.
Yeah.
You know, let them be them.
I think the challenge with that is that, you know, you and I are a little bit crazy. So, I mean, the crazy comes out when we're trying to be ourselves, I guess.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's funny though, as you get older, you kind of tone down the craziness a little bit.
No doubt. Well, man, you're at an unbelievable – I mean, I've been there, the school that you're at, it's a phenomenal place, but it's in terms of strength and conditioning, specifically football strength and conditioning, it's a challenge. I mean, you're dealing with high level of academics. You're dealing with a school that's probably more known for its basketball programs than its football programs in the past. Sure. Talk a little bit about the challenges of dealing with, you know, such a demanding school – with your players and how that affects you as a coach and some things that you have to, you know, keep in mind.
Yeah, you know, we had to learn more early on than now. You know, this is year 11. So we've got a really good grasp at this point of the challenges these kids are faced with every day. You know, what they face with more than anything are like group meetings. You know, the school is really set on doing a lot of group projects and interaction between students, you know. So we deal with a lot of that, particularly in the evenings, you know. So what we do as a program, we're a morning practice team.
Yeah.
You know? So we are typically done by 10:35 in the morning. You know, our meetings will start at 7:05 or 7:10, depending on the day. You know, we're flexing 8:35. You know, so we're off the practice field, you know, 10:20 to 10:30 every morning. You know, so we've learned, coach, you know, is so wise. Holy cow, what a smart guy. You know, just kind of what is best for these kids. So when we're done, they're done. The rest of the day is just pure academics, you know. What we'll do in our winter time, from our lifting standpoint, we'll do everything still set up in the mornings, you know. We'll have one group a little bit later in the morning. They start like at 10:45, and those kids are 1:25 class starts, you know. So Duke doesn't have a lot of early morning classes, you know. So particularly our kids, their first class of the day is going to be 11:45 in the morning, you know. So over the years, we've kind of learned what it is we're able to do and how set our schedules up around them academically, you know. And then from our standpoint, it's also being, man, I don't want to say leaning enough, but maybe understanding.
Sure.
You know, that, you know what, man, there's certain things these kids have got to get done, and we're going to have to rearrange a little bit what we do and what we demand of them. And just over the years, the kids have learned to respect that. And, you know, we just, you know, we have a good relationship between the program and academics and the university itself. And it's just been a really good fit.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm sure you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old knuckleheads, just like everybody else. But they're you know, because of their in a school like Duke, they're probably
You know what? You know, Ron, we are so fortunate with the kids we have. You know, the character of these kids. You know, they are, man. There are some knuckleheads. You know, but we do not have near issues that a lot of places deal with. You know, it's funny. We tell recruits when they come through and their families, we tell the same thing to scouts. If you want to see the type of student athlete that's in this program, go through the locker room during practice.
Yeah.
Your wallets are left out, phones left out, money's left out. Man, they're not worried about anybody stealing anything.
Sure.
You know, that's who these kids are, you know, and that's why we're able to do some of the things we're able to do because of the character of these kids. You know, we can give them some leniency in certain things, you know, because they're not going to take advantage of anything. You know, these kids want to compete. They want to win. They want to do great academically.
Right.
And it's just, it's a blessing come every day and work with these guys. I've learned more probably from these players over 11 years, maybe than I've learned from the coaches I worked with.
Sure.
You know, just what they do every day.
It's awesome. You know? It's awesome. You mentioned a little bit about the in-season schedule. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, there's some, you know, I was at programs that had an afternoon schedule, and I was at programs that had a morning schedule, and arranging lift times around those class schedule, or maybe, you know, a little bit later in the day than you would normally go. And talk a little bit about the schedule, and then, you know, what your, you know, how you set up the in-season program.
Yeah, we lift on Sundays. All right, so we'll have offense, defensive lifts on Sundays, and this year we've done a little bit different. So where our first group starts at 1:15 on Sunday, and it may be, you know, and it'll flip every week what group's starting. But let's say yesterday, again, our offense lifted first. And then, so while they're lifting, defense is meeting. All right. And then it'll flip at 2:15. Okay. So each group's getting in for about roughly about 45 minutes. And then we're done with that last group right around 3:00, and they go to meetings at 3:30, special teams meeting. They have a team meeting with coach and go to special teams. And then we'll flex at 4:15. You know, we do a Sunday practice. It's about a 45-minute practice, some corrections and moving around. And we've done it the whole 11 years we've been here, and it's been great. You know, just what it does for them physically.
Sure.
You know, trying to get moving around and get that stuff going. And then Monday's our day off, you know. Then for us on Tuesdays, again, we'll practice Tuesday morning. We call it Bloody Tuesday. That's obviously, as everybody else in the nation, your biggest practice day, you know. And that's all we'll do. We don't do anything else, you know. So they just practice, and then we let them eat, hydrate, recover, go to class, do things to help them out for Wednesday, yeah. You know. And then Wednesday morning, again, we'll practice in the morning, and then we will have a handful of guys. We don't have many because we try to limit it after right after practice. All right, those are only kids, and like this year, I know I think we got 8 kids, and those are all kids that we cannot get in any other times, just because of their academic schedules.
Yeah,
what we try to do is we try to give them 45 minutes from when they get in, get a snack, start drinking some Gatorade, you know, get that stuff in their system, and then we get about a 40-minute lift, upper body lift, and then we'll have 2 more groups later in the day at 3:15, then again at 5:00. That usually covers a little more than half of the team. Thursday mornings, we walk through, okay? So we do not move around Thursday. We call it No Sweat Thursday. So we walk through Thursday morning, and then what we'll do after that is the other, a little less than half of the team will come in and lift, okay? And they'll come in right after. So that group will start right about 11 o'clock on Thursday morning, and they're done about 11:45. So, and again, going back to the character of the kid, even though it's a big, big group, we know, and then with our, we kind of set the staff around the room, and they're doing the work. They're getting things in. They're not going through the motions because, again, just kind of who they are.
Right.
Friday mornings at 6:30, we have our developmental guys, and that'll be our third group, or they're not third group, but their third lift. So, and that's a day for us. We will do just a lot of the Olympic lifts. You know, our goal with that group at the end of the semester is they are proficient with what we do, every Olympic movement we do. So when January rolls around, they're hitting it running. You know, we're not backtracking anything. You know, the only guys at that point we got to backtrack a little bit are some of the freshmen that are playing. You know, and for us, we typically don't play that many freshmen. You know, so those guys will get caught up in January or early February and kind of go. So, and then we'll go practice. We practice after that.
So the developmental guys lift what days then?
Sunday, and then either Wednesday or Thursday, right? Depending on, again, on academics, on class schedules. And we try to get as many guys Wednesday as we can. We have a bunch of kids Wednesdays that have classes from 3:05 through 5:50, you know? And then they go to dinner after that. We're not going to do anything that late in the evening because we're going to practice again in the morning. So, and then, again, Thursday after the walkthrough, the other half, and then Friday morning. So for our developmental guys, man, we'll just let them 3 days a week. We don't do a fourth day, yeah. You know, because the only thing they're doing that the other guys aren't doing is Saturday.
Right.
You know, so instead of beating them up, because we need, you know, we need practice guys. You know, we need guys to help from a scout team standpoint as everybody else does. So
you pretty much have, you know, a travel on a developmental. There's not really a three-day group that's traveling.
No, anybody that's traveling will not lift Friday morning.
Gotcha.
So, and again, for us, you know, because again, like this year's signing class, only 16 kids.
Yep.
You know, so it's a small class. A couple, three are playing, or actually maybe four are playing, you know, so for our developmental lift Friday mornings, you know, we've got like 12 scholarship kids and another 13, 14 walk-ons.
Yeah.
That come in and do the same lift and, you know, just kind of coach them the same way.
Gotcha. You know, when I was there last, we talked about, I think you're, I know you do Bible studies with the guys, and I think you do at your house.
Yep.
You know, and you have your family involved in that.
Yeah, they love it.
Talk a little bit about the importance of getting your players around your family and,
yep.
And work with them outside of the weight room.
You know what? Again, it kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier with Coach Ducky. You know, as far as just his relationships with the players, with the student athletes. You know, we all know this is a relationship type business. Yeah. You know, we are fortunate again. My wife is a saint, you know, and I say that from the standpoint, she's a much better person than what I am. You know, she's fiery. Don't get me wrong. You know, she is an explosive lady. And my daughters take after my wife quite a bit.
Sure.
But we have loved over the years, you know, I kind of backtrack how this kind of got started, Ron. We had a couple of kids that got hurt. All right. One of them was a fifth-year senior, was a tight end for us. Now, I went to coach and said, hey, you know, I'm kind of concerned about Braxton, you know, because the kid didn't have a plan B.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And again, man, football was everything, and I was really concerned about this kid. So would you mind once in a while or once a week having a kid, you know, have him over for dinner? He said, no, that's fine. You know, that'd be great, you know. Another one of the players caught wind of it. You know, another kid who's sitting out. And it was Kelby's idea, say, hey, would you mind if I come along? Because I've been trying to, you know, get with Braxton a little bit. So, no, that's fine. So they started coming over, and they came over for a couple months, once a week, you know, and just kind of eating and hanging out and just talking.
Right.
And they started bringing the girlfriends. Right, girlfriends started coming over. And then former players started coming over at the same time. So we kind of made it like a Wednesday night meal.
Right.
And my daughters loved it, you know, because they don't have brothers.
Sure.
You know, so a lot of these kids, man, just kind of pour into the family and just absorb because they, again, they miss home,
right.
You know, 18, 20-year-old kids, you know. Kelby came up with the idea, say, hey, why don't we just kind of turn this into a Bible study, you know. I said, I'm in, you know. So, praise God, you know, we were able to do it because we had just moved closer to Durham a few months earlier, right? Because, again, like you did, we tried to adopt internationally for 4 years.
Right.
You know, and it just didn't work, you know. And it's funny because we had been matched several times, and each time it fell through.
Really?
So my wife and I, we were playing I don't want to keep you long, but we were playing at Carolina, all right, in 2013, all right. And we beat Carolina at home, win the 10th game to win the Coastal.
Yeah.
All right, so you get in the locker room, there's so much emotion going on, you know. And for the first time, it really dawned on me, because this time we're still kind of going through the process. My wife at this point was done. She was done trying to adopt.
Sure.
She'd been hurt. She was done, you know. So you get so much emotion in the locker room. For the first time, it really dawned on me just how much I love these kids, you know. So we got up and getting ready to go to church that Sunday morning, and I mentioned to Kelly, so you know what, I'm okay. You know, if this does not work out, I'm all right, because I get to go to work every day with 100 kids.
Right.
That I love to go to work with every day, you know. So we made the decision at that point, because at that time we were living in Hillsboro, which is about 15, 20 minutes away. Let's move close to school so we can get more involved.
It's awesome.
You know, so we ended up moving about 4 miles from campus, you know. And, man, and one thing led to another, like I say, and now it's just kind of grown to the point. Some Wednesday nights, actually this year now we're starting to do it on Sunday nights because our schedule is a little bit different. But, you know, we may have 15, 20 kids.
Wow.
You know, come over and do it. And my wife always has desserts, you know, because they're going to come from dinner over, you know. So she has some snacks laid out, and we'll kind of socialize for a little bit and then kind of get into the word, you know. And it's been a blessing. It's been a blessing to my wife, been a blessing to my kids, you know, because my wife, you know, again, not having sons, and I don't want to sound wrong because I love my daughters to death, you know, but she's kind of missed that.
Sure.
You know, she just kind of helps her as well kind of fill that.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, but it's been fun. Been a lot of fun. And we get out of, you know, so it's funny because the parents always kind of email and stay in touch, you know. We tell them all the time we get more out of it than the kids are getting.
Yeah.
You know, it rewards us more than it probably does them.
Well, that's what it gets to the core why 99.9% of us gotten into the profession. You know, and I think that's so important. And I think the takeaway message that, you know, the coaches that are listening, I want them to hear is it's all right to be have that vulnerability. I mean, there's times where I'm sure that's been tough to do. I'm sure there's probably been times in your career where maybe, you know, hey, the stacks weren't as nice as they were maybe another time, you know, but,
yep.
You know, I think that was something that I fought with early on in my career was like, you know, my house isn't that nice, or, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time or whatever it is, but I mean, just do whatever you can. And
yep.
the kids love it. I mean, they absolutely love it and be a part of your family, and that's ultimately what we want. And those kids will work 10 times as hard for you back in the weight room as well.
Yeah. Amen. You know what I mean? And they're going to yes or no, sir. Because, you know, man, it's mutual respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
What it comes down to.
You know, you and I have been in the profession for quite some time, and there's the good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, what do you tell these young coaches now that are coming up through the ranks on, you know, what are the things, what's the takeaway message from your career that you want to impart on them?
Man, biggest thing I tell these guys here, know who you're working for.
Yeah.
Really know who you're working for. You know, don't take a job just to take a job. You know, life is miserable. Life can be really miserable really quick.
Yep.
You know who it is you're working for, really understand who that person is. You know, man, we're all one fall away, you know, from being unemployed.
Yeah.
You know, so you just really know who it is you're working for. You know, it's probably the biggest thing, you know. Again, be passionate, you know, about what it is you do. You know, again, going back to what we mentioned, again, they're 18, 22-year-old kids. You ain't going to fool them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can't trick them. You know, you love what you do, you don't love what you do, and if you don't love it,
right?
You know? And they know if you're in it for you or if you're really in it to be a servant for them, to help them out, you know, because again, that's what we're trying to do is we are here for them. You know, ultimately they're not here to help us, man. We're here to help them be the best they can be, you know, whatever aspect that is and however that grows, you know, but that's what we're here to do. Like you said a moment ago, 99.9%. You know, for the relationship part with the student athlete.
Yeah, great.
And to help them grow, you know. So there's a lot of different ways to help them grow. You know, so part of it's in the weight room, part of it's on the practice field, part of it's when you're out doing conditioning, part of it's sitting in your office, part of it's in your house.
Right.
You know, there is no one way to do it.
Yeah, that's a great line. I mean, they know if you're in it for them or for yourself. That's
You can't fool them. You know, you ain't going to trick these kids.
And, you know, I think it's, you know, I think as, again, as young coaches, oftentimes you feel like you know, that you're entitled to this career that you're chasing and you're blinded by ambition. And, you know, those athletes are a byproduct of that. And that's everything, you know, do a great job where you're at. And
Amen.
You know. We end the show, Noel, with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
That I have ever received. Man, wow, I've been so fortunate. Probably the best piece, again, it's funny. I can go back to a conversation Tommy and I had. You know, Tommy and I had a couple classes together when we were at UT, all right? So I loved, again, walking back from school, from class, on the way back to the weight room, just talking, you know? And one of the things he mentioned to me is once you understand what your philosophy is, okay, once you've developed what it is you truly believe as a coach, don't deviate from it, you know? Because if you don't really truly believe what it is, if you deviate, then do you really trust what it is you believe?
Right.
You know? Along the same lines as don't do too many things where you don't get good at any of them.
Right.
You know? Don't spread yourself so thin. You know, don't change philosophies every year, you know? And what we've done – since the Tennessee days, you know, back in mid to late 90s, what I do now isn't a whole lot different.
Right.
You know, what we did at BYU isn't a whole lot different. You know, what we did at Ole Miss isn't a whole lot different. You know, now the technology part and things like that have made things evolve a little bit.
Sure.
You know, endo units and catapults and, man, even hydration testing. You know, the refractometers, we use the Nord board now as part of our program, you know, with our ATCs, you know, so we're doing the same type of stuff, but now using the technology has kind of made that grow a little more, you know, takes a lot of the guessing out of it,
you know,
from that standpoint. So I guess the best piece of advice, again, is once you develop what you believe philosophically, don't change.
Have conviction.
You're not believing it.
Yeah, have conviction. I think that's important. I
mean, yeah.
Not so much to where you're not willing to grow or test it.
Right. Sure.
But definitely, you know, have conviction and
sure.
Be upfront.
Because again, man, the kid, you're not going to fool the kids, man. If you believe what you believe, man, you're going to be passionate about it.
Yep.
You know, if you are not passionate about what it is you're doing, man, there ain't going to be buy-in.
No doubt.
You're going to be passionate about it.
No doubt.
You know,
give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Man, a book, man, I love triphasic.
Yeah.
You know, I love triphasic. To the point now where every new coach that comes into our program, I'll buy it for them. You know, because, again, there's just a lot of good general information as well.
Yeah.
Within the book, you know, it's an easy read. I don't want that to sound wrong, but, you know, some of those Soviet books will kick your rear end a little bit from a verbiage standpoint. But the triphasic, I love it. Man, a website, YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, again, just a good general, you know, but as you discovered earlier, as I was trying to find my way through the computer, I don't get on the computer a whole lot, you know, and just sit on it, you know. But I do like to get on YouTube and watch guys lift. And that's one of the things we talk about with our coaches, you know. I mean, I love those Iron Mind training hall tapes.
Yeah.
You know, the we have the old VCR tapes when we were at UT. Now they're the DVDs. We'll put those in while guys are lifting.
Yeah.
We'll play them on the TVs, let them watch those a little bit as well. You know, and I like the coaches, you know, we would make copies for those guys. And it's like anything else, you know, man, the more you watch, the better, the more proficient you'll become.
Great.
You know, as a coach.
I remember those old tapes. I remember coming to UT and seeing those.
Man, I love them. I love them. I got them sitting right back here behind me. You know?
Well, man, this has been awesome. I took a lot of notes here you know, the most important thing I think is, you know, the type of person you are, the passion you have for your athletes, you know, that the passion you have for your athletes outside of the weight room blends into the weight room and makes what you do a joy of your life, you know, instead of a drag or instead of a challenge or whatever it may be. And, you know, and all throughout the evenness and just knowing you, I mean, you truly do have passion for what you do. That comes from that desire to make an impact on players' lives, and you've done it in a big way for a lot of years. And just appreciate that, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. You got it. Thank you, Ron.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.